In a black star-sprinkled sky, we soar backward over Earth.
W-U-R-G 94.9 The Urge, Haddonfield's home for rock.
I'm Willie the Kid and there's nothing you can do about it.
The Earth eclipses the sun and a massive word hovers front and center. Universal, a Comcast company. Bright blue light outlines a block letter M. More block letters spell out a word. Miramax, a BN Media Group and Paramount company. A masked figure stands in the dark woods. Our view draws back through a creepy house, passing several disturbing scenes. An arm hangs out of an overflowing bathtub, and an axe sticks out of the floor. The house settles into a logo, Blumhouse. Credits appear over black. Universal Pictures, Miramax, and Blumhouse present a Malik Akkad production. In association with Rough House Pictures. Text appears, Haddonfield, Illinois. Halloween night, 2019. In a neighborhood, costumed trick-or-treaters move from house to house. Carrying a backpack, a young man with curly brown hair and large glasses rides a bicycle. He arrives at an old white mansion as trick-or-treaters hurry away. A luxury car sits parked near the front door beneath the house's porte cochere. A blonde woman in a 1920s flapper costume opens the door for the young man.
Corey, you're a lifesaver.
Right.
How have you been? Come on in.
A man plays piano in the next room.
Roger! Corey's here!
Sorry this is last minute, but Andrea got a stomach bug and literally just called me.
Oh, it's okay.
It's Roger's company Halloween party, and I could care less, but... Roger!
Hope he's better at child care than he is at yard work.
You know, next spring you should consider some perennials. Hydrangeas can really balance out that
saving for college? Where'd you save for going?
Oh, I'm applying to a few different engineering programs. Just saving money this year so I could go next
fall. Jeremy, the sinner's here!
The blonde gazes up through the center of a tall, winding staircase.
Jeremy!
She looks annoyed. A boy in a furry werewolf mask emerges from under the stairs.
You! I'm gonna get you! I'm gonna get you!
Jeremy runs from his mom, then throws a paper airplane at Corey.
Crash landing!
Oh!
Can you show me how to make a thunder bomber? Number one of all time? My dad can be the best!
No pressure.
Yeah, I'll sure give it a shot, little dude.
You gonna be good for Mr. Corey?
Corey, can I talk to you for a second?
Here comes the thunder bomber!
I'm gonna put the candy on the porch. Trick-or-treat kids can help themselves.
Help yourself to anything in the fridge.
She made zucchini bread. It's actually good.
You have my number.
Okay.
If there's an emergency, but we'll just be right down the street. And there is one thing I need to tell you. Since last Halloween, all the events and, you know, the headlines of Michael Myers, Jeremy's been afraid of the dark. He's been wetting the bed at night. And bedtime has been difficult.
I can read him a story or something. Does he have a favorite book?
Then once he goes to bed, he talks in his sleep. Says he hears voices. He's just really sensitive to things that give him bad dreams.
Right, all that just sounds like normal kid imagination stuff, right?
She eyes Corey.
No TV and no more candy. You guys can play till 8:30, 8:45. Then he should go to bed.
Easy money.
Yes.
Gonna come play with me or what?
That sounds like a threat.
It's Halloween.
We're gonna have a good time tonight.
Later, Corey and Jeremy watch The Thing. A giant mouth opens in a man's torso and bites off another man's arms.
Oh.
Look, man, we can shut it off if you're scared of monsters.
No, no. You're scared.
I'm 21 years old. I don't get scared.
You're scared because you know Michael Myers is stealing.
Okay, man, it's gonna get you.
He's not gonna get me. Michael Myers kills babysitters, not kids.
Corey's smile fades. In the movie, a man's head tears off his body, revealing monstrous green innards.
Okay, that's actually pretty disgusting and probably not appropriate for kids. Why don't we shut this off? You can play hide and seek before bed. Your parents are going to be home soon.
I don't want to play no hide and seek. Stupid. I want to watch this movie. And I don't really feel like pretending to be best friends with an ugly ass boy babysitter.
Corey stares off with a furrowed brow. Then scowls at Jeremy.
for 5 minutes and then you're going to bed.
You suck at babysitting.
I'm not a babysitter.
Corey marches out of the living room. He enters the kitchen and looks around. On the island counter, a section of the zucchini bread sits on a cutting board. A serrated bread knife lies beside the bread. Corey opens the fridge. He spots two beers beside a half gallon of chocolate milk. He grabs a beer and glances off. He puts it away and takes out the chocolate milk. He notices the bread and starts to cut himself a piece. Corey sets down the knife and leaves the kitchen.
Jeremy, turn that movie off.
He finds a toppled lamp on the floor, its light bulb flashing.
Jeremy?
Finding no sign of Jeremy, he stands the lamp upright. Corey turns it off, then reaches for Jeremy's werewolf mask.
Jeremy?
Going into the large foyer, he finds the front door hanging open. Corey wears a tense expression. A shadow moves across a wall behind him, and he turns. He looks back to the open front door. Going outside, Corey stands in the driveway beneath a porte cochere.
Jeremy! Jeremy! Come out, wherever you are!
He wanders up the driveway and looks around the darkness. In Jeremy's bedroom, Corey checks a closet.
This isn't funny, Jeremy!
He looks under a bed, finding no sign of the boy. Corey bumps his head.
Jeremy!
He hurries downstairs to the kitchen. On the island, the serrated knife no longer lies beside the bread. Corey steps past the island, then returns. He touches the cutting board. Entering the foyer, Corey gazes up the stairs.
Jeremy?
He walks up to a landing. He stops walking and lowers his anxious gaze. Continuing on, he finds the serrated bread knife lying on a stair. Corey grabs it. Wielding the blade at his side, he continues up the stairs to a small landing. Two doors hang slightly open. Corey moves to the door in front of the stairs and opens it. He cautiously proceeds into the dimly lit attic.
Jeremy.
A view from the staircase shows him moving through the dark space. He stops and looks around.
Jeremy.
He wears an anxious expression.
Jeremy.
The door slams. He hurries over. Outside, Jeremy's parents arrive in their luxury car. They park beneath the porte cochere. Inside, Corey yanks on the attic door.
Jeremy! You got me, buddy. Hey, let me out.
Are you scared?
Jay? Jeremy, let me out. Let me out.
Jeremy's mom gets out of the car.
Oh, shit. Let me out of here!
I'm fired.
Jeremy, it's not funny, okay?
The parents go up the front steps. Corey kicks the attic door. The parents enter the foyer.
I'm gonna kill you, Jeremy!
Corey kicks open the door and it hits Jeremy in the face.
What was that?
The boy lands at the bottom of the stairs.
Jeremy!
Oh, no!
Jeremy!
Oh, God, no, please!
Blood pools beneath the boy as his parents rush over.
Jeremy!
Holding the bread knife, Corey peers down from the top floor. Kneeling over her dead son, the blonde glares up at Corey. A title appears. Halloween ends. Credits appear beside jack-o'-lanterns. Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie. Andy Matichak as Allison, Rohan Campbell as Corey, Will Patton as Frank, Kyle Richards as Lindsay, James Jude Courtney as The Shape. Jesse C. Boyd as Officer Mulaney. Joanne Barron as Joan. Omar J. Dorsey as Sheriff Barker. Michael Barbieri as Terry. Casting by Terry Taylor, CSA. Sarah Domeyer Lindo, CSA. Special Makeup FX Designer, Christopher Nelson. Music Supervisors, DeVoe Yates, Gabe Hilfer. Music by John Carpenter, Cody Carpenter, Daniel Davies. Co-producer, Attila Saleh Yusser. Costume Designer, Emily Gunshore. Edited by Tim Alverson, ACE. Production Designer, Richard A. Wright. Director of Photography, Michael Simmons. Executive Producers, John Carpenter, Jamie Lee Curtis. Executive Producers, Andrew Golov, Tom Zadra. Executive Producers, Ryan Turek, Christopher H. Warner. Executive Producers, Danny McBride, David Gordon Green. Executive Producer, Ryan Fryman. Produced by Malik Akkad, PGA, Jason Blum, Bill Block. Based on characters created by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. Written by Paul Brad Logan and Chris Bernier, and Danny McBride and David Gordon Green. Directed by David Gordon Green. Kids in Halloween costumes move around the small town.
Haddonfield was a peaceful town. And then one Halloween night many years ago...
Flashbacks appear.
All of that was lost.
Michael stands outside a house at night.
Michael Myers was pure evil.
Young Laurie cries.
He took our dreams and turned them into nightmares.
She stabs Michael in the neck with a knitting needle. She secures multiple locks.
As he was locked away in his prison.
At the secure facility, inmates stand in the courtyard.
I disappeared into mine.
Laurie trains with guns at her remote house. Michael gets on an inmate bus. Hawkins and others find it crashed.
And then, as I predicted, 40 years later, he escaped. And Haddonfield was once again forced to confront this man in a mask.
Glimpses show Michael brutally murdering people. He kills Cameron, and Allison screams. An angry mob swarms Sheriff Barker.
His senseless brutality ravaged my community and killed my daughter.
Karen lies dead. Michael stands in a dark house as police lights flash outside.
And then he vanished.
Daytime.
Impossible?
News clippings hang on a wall.
Perhaps.
The headlines feature the Myers house.
Truth would evolve into legend as people searched for motive and meaning, looking in the shadows for their boogeyman.
On the night of Jeremy's death, deputies put Corey into a squad car. Laurie arrives on the scene. Hawkins eyes a couple shot dead in a car.
In the years that followed, the people of Haddonfield descended into a plague of grief, of blame, of paranoia.
You think he's come back?
Michael doesn't use guns.
A woman hangs outside a house.
The suffering Michael caused became an infection, passing on to people who never even crossed his path.
Laurie looks on.
And as the town turned in on itself, I made a promise not to let fear rule my life anymore.
She decorates a red two-story house.
I bought a home, a place to live with love and trust, not a trap, not a place to hide.
Smiling, Allison joins Laurie in the kitchen.
Hey.
It has been 4 years since I last saw my monster.
A framed photo shows Karen.
So here I am, a survivor attempting to share my story and find healing.
Laurie works on a memoir.
Michael Myers was the personification of evil.
Laurie gives Allison a gold necklace with two rings on it.
It's theirs. It's their wedding rings.
Wearing it, Allison tearfully regards her parents' rings.
It's up to each of us whether or not we lock the door and find our resolve or let him inside.
Sitting at a laptop in her home office, Laurie works on her memoir. She deletes "Let him inside."
Let it inside.
She alters the sentence again.
Let evil inside.
Wearing nursing scrubs, Allison rushes downstairs.
Allison! Darn it!
Laurie follows.
Honey, I'm so sorry.
What is it?
Oh, fuck. It's
my pie. I put a pie in the oven. Oh, shit. Oh, I must have forgotten to set the timer. Damn it.
Allison grabs a fire extinguisher from the pantry.
Oh, I can no. get a pie from the store.
No. I wanted to bake you a pumpkin pie. It's a Halloween tradition.
Lori puts the pie in the sink. Allison smiles.
Are you?
I gotta go. I'm late for work.
But do you have your costume for the party?
I told you, I don't want to go alone. So I'm not going.
Lori turns to the smoking pie.
Oh.
Corey rides his bicycle through town.
WURG 94.9, giving you the urge with Willie the Kid. Haddonfield's home for rock.
It is 4 days until Halloween.
A car nearly hits him.
It's time to lock your doors. Grab your knife for the fight. You ready? You ready in case the boogeyman decides
to come out and play? I know I am. But let's talk about that Michael Myers for a minute. How does the one man get shot at, stabbed up, and then he fall down the street and get back up to scare the piss out of
him? At a salvage yard full of cars, workers toss metal into a scrap metal shredding machine. As he talks on the phone, a burly man spots Corey arriving.
I'm pretty sure that was interchangeable. Hold on a second.
Hey, Corey, you're late! You're late again!
Corey waves as he heads to an auto garage. Using an oxyacetylene torch, he works beneath a car on a lift. He cuts a large metal part off the car.
He'll be back! I'm Willie the Kid, and I'll be creeping it real on 94.9 WUR.
Corey, got a second?
The burly man turns down the radio. Outside, Corey pulls a tarp off an old motorcycle.
What do you think?
He eyes the bike.
Yeah?
Get it registered. Get some new plates. I got no use for it no more.
Are you serious?
With a good engine pushing you, finally make it to work on time, you know what I mean?
Does it work?
Yeah, it works, just kind of shitty.
Corey sits on the motorcycle and grips the handlebars.
Hey, Ronald? Thanks.
Ronald pats him on the shoulder.
No problem, kid.
Allison drives through town. A squad car pulls her over on an overpass. A billboard nearby features Willie the Kid. Allison watches in her mirrors as the fair-haired deputy approaches her car. He leans in her open window.
You're under arrest. For being the prettiest girl I know.
That's nice, Doug. Is that why you pulled me over?
No. I pulled you over because I miss you. You miss me. Just kidding. Pulled you over because it looks like your muffler's about to fall off.
Better get that fixed for you. I have a bigger problem with you.
Our view lowers beneath the overpass, where a bearded homeless man carries a bag of recyclables.
Only if yes, now
he adds the bag to a shopping cart full of items. He pushes the cart away. Our view slowly drifts toward a storm sewer outflow pipe nearby. A view from inside the large round opening shows the area beneath the overpass. At a gas station, the bearded homeless man searches a dumpster. He notices Corey arriving on his bicycle. In the convenience store, Corey stares at drinks in a cooler. The clerk eyes him.
You gonna buy something or what?
Corey glances at her, then grabs a chocolate beverage in a glass bottle. Outside, teenagers arrive. The four teens get out of a black convertible. One wears a marching band uniform, and another carries drumsticks.
Billy.
ID.
So what's the plan?
Give me the ID.
ID?
Yeah.
They got confiscated last week.
He's got the money. He's got the ID. You don't have your ID?
Oh, I lost it.
Hey, yo.
They approach Corey.
New friend.
Bring you a little milk.
Yeah.
I like milk, though. Yeah.
What? Here's the deal, man. We're seniors, okay? We've been practicing for a show the whole year, you know, loading up for tonight's game, and we're in the fucking marching band. We were just hoping you could be a cool new friend, you know? Buy us a couple of six-packs.
Corey smiles nervously, then shakes his head.
Just for me and my crew. Come on, man.
No.
No. No, thank you,
but I can.
Oh, wait. I know who you are.
You did something messy.
I can't believe they let you off.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
You're that psycho babysitter.
He killed that kid, didn't he?
Yep.
Killed a kid and too pussy to buy some fucking
guys, you know what? Let's just fucking forget about it. Let's just go to the game, okay?
You're just a little pedo.
Look at him.
Let him know, Perry.
That what you want? A little fucking pedo creep?
Corey squeezes a glass bottle and it breaks in his hand.
So where's your next bit?
What the fuck?
Perry shoves him into the ice freezer. Corey looks at his wounded hand.
Look at you. I fucking milk everywhere.
Holy shit.
Look what you did.
Hey, assholes.
Lori approaches.
Knock it off.
We're not doing anything.
We're just talking,
we're messing
miss.
Around,
ma'am.
Hey, guys, would you look at this? I mean, a psycho meets a freak show. Wow.
Can't
this
believe
is a match made in heaven.
Hey, come on. Look at this. Hot top
for now. Let's go, y'all.
Michael Myers.
Corey pulls a shard from a deep gash in his hand. Lori helps him to his feet.
Are you the psycho or the freak show?
Hey, Margot, do you want to go to the school play on Saturday?
Yeah, sure, Terry.
Have fun.
Terry and his crew enter the store.
So do you want to do it? You want me to?
Lori opens a pocket knife and nods toward Terry's car. Corey stabs a tire, then yanks the knife out. He gets into Lori's truck. At the hospital, Allison wears a black cat mask.
Look at it. Are you kidding? It looks great on you.
I'm sure it does, but I'm not going.
Once you put the whole outfit on, you'll love it. I say, it's not sexy, it's not Halloween.
Well, someone's getting into the spirit of things.
Lori and Corey arrive.
This gentleman had an accident and needs a little fix up.
In an exam room.
Got significant information. I'm going to be nice and numb it here so my assistant can clean it up really well, and then I will get back and close it with a suture.
Allison stands near the doctor and Corey.
You're going to feel a little bit of a pinch here.
She and Corey share a look.
Cute, isn't she?
The supply table topples.
Sorry,
what are you doing?
My fault.
Oh,
Allison,
my
sorry.
Sorry. No, my fault. It was my fault. I'm so sorry.
What a mess. Just clean it up and get a goddamn sterile kit. And give him a tetanus shot. I'll be back.
As the gray-haired doctor heads out, Allison collects the fallen items.
You shouldn't let that guy talk to you like that. It's gonna make you sad, even if you don't think it does.
She smiles.
I've dealt with much worse.
He meets her gaze.
But thank you.
She tends to his hand.
Anyway, I've just been dealing with it. Well, I'm supposed to get this promotion, but either way, it's just...
Is it worth it?
What'd you do?
To
your hand.
I was at work and then I had a little accident.
So your job sucks too.
Huh?
Where do you work? What do you do?
Oh, mechanic shop.
Don't move. Don't let it get infected. So my car's been rattling.
Rattling?
Yeah.
It's just your exhaust system clamps come loose. It's an easy fix. It takes like 5 minutes. Super cinchy.
She looks up at him.
You just need a lift and 2 screws.
Cinchy?
Outside.
You don't have to fix it right now.
I don't have my stuff.
He crawls out from under her car.
I am at the shop tomorrow. I can fix it there.
Why can't the bicycle stand on its own?
No, it can't. It's got a kickstand.
Because it was too tired.
Yeah. They share a smile.
Well, I'm actually getting rid of the bike, so if you want it, you can have it. I got a motorcycle.
Oh, a motorcycle. Teach me to ride it.
Yeah?
You have shit on your back.
She brushes dirt off his tan jacket. Corey looks at a radio tower in the distance.
We should go out sometime and do something.
With me?
With both of us. I mean, we both have to be there, otherwise it wouldn't be a very good time.
He smiles, then turns to face her.
You don't want to do that. I'm going to be late for dinner.
He looks at his bandage.
I appreciate the hand. Feels better already.
At home, Lori guts a pumpkin.
So you did that on purpose?
What? He was injured. He needed medical attention, and Dr. Matthews is the best in town.
Do not believe a word she says. You know, she's a strategist. She's just trying to play cute.
He was cute. Seemed nice. Are you going to call him and invite him to her party, or are you going to just go alone?
Now pick a card. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I got the death card. No, that's not bad on tarot. No, that just means a major phase is ending and a new one is about to begin. So that pretty much puts a nail in the coffin with that police officer you were dating.
Oh, Doug.
Allison's friend pours wine.
You know, you need to find someone that can let go. That makes you want to rip off your shirt and show grief your fucking tits and say, you know what? Let's go. This is delicious.
At home, Corey eats dinner with his mom and Ronald.
Is it infected? Is your hand infected? What did the doctor say?
He said it's going to be fine, Mom. He said that you don't need to worry, and he said it would be terrific is what he said.
Well, I just might have to send him back to the call center to work for Devon if you can't give him proper supervision.
I can't keep my eyes on every second.
Corey gets text messages. How about a costume party?
What the hell are you doing?
He replies.
Who's that calling you under the dinner table?
No.
I don't have a costume.
Who's that person you're texting?
It's no one.
He gets a response. I can fix that.
Boys who keep secrets don't get custard for dessert.
As his mom leaves the table, Corey looks to Ronald.
Don't tell her about the motorcycle then.
At the salvage yard, Corey rides the old yellow motorcycle. He drives it past the auto garage. Nearby, the large shredder machine spits scrap metal into a pile. Corey turns the bike around and rides it through the yard. By the entrance, Ronald talks to a man. Allison arrives in her car. Ronald walks over.
Something I can help you with?
Corey said I should bring it in.
Corey rides the motorcycle up to Allison. He turns the bike off as he dismounts.
Get on.
Allison gets on the bike and he sits behind her.
Okay, so...
He puts his hands on hers.
Okay. Right hand gas, left hand is your front. Fuck. Sorry. Right hand is gas. Also your front brake. And then left hand is your clutch. Right foot is your back brake. And left foot is the shifter thingy. Simple.
Doesn't sound simple.
Yo, Corey! Don't give us a hand.
Terry arrives with his dad.
Terry.
I'm sorry to bother you with this shit. My goddamn son drove 3 miles on a fucking flat because he doesn't know how to change a tire on a goddamn automobile. Fucking genius.
I got it.
Corey and Allison get off the motorcycle.
I'm going to go help Ronald fix the rattle. Your rattle. Your car's...
I don't care about the rattle. I came to see you.
He shakes his head. At a store, a worker gives meat to Hawkins.
3 pounds of brown chip right here on the top.
Thank you.
Be right back with the lean.
Jesus, Frank, have you ever heard of a vegetable?
Well, look who it is.
Lori tosses him a can of vegetables.
They're good for you.
Well, I like to mix meats and make croquettes for the guys at the station.
That just sounds disgusting.
He indicates her shoulder-length hair.
I like your hair.
Thanks. Thanks. I just sort of chopped it one day. I just was felt like time.
Wow.
Somebody else fixed it.
Help.
Yeah.
Here goes the lean.
Thank you, Travis.
Have a good day.
Okay.
See ya.
But I tell you, I feel like I won an extra life.
Ooh.
I really do. I got myself a guitar at the pawn shop, and I've been fiddling around with that. Mm. My niece gave me a Rosetta Stone, and now I'm learning Japanese. Mm. Shatsu o Nakoshita.
What does that mean? It
means I lost my shirt. I think. Or I lost my hat. I don't know.
Hawkins gestures for her to go ahead of him in the checkout line.
Who knows? Maybe I'll fly over for the cherry blossoms. Test it out on the locals.
Lori smiles.
You still got your nose in that book you're writing?
Your fault. It was your idea.
It was.
He shakes his head.
Got a title?
Just set up my office, you know. I have a house with Allison. We're living together. It's nice. You know, she's been talking to this guy. You probably know him, Corey Cunningham.
Oh, yeah, I do know. He's a good kid. Had a tough break. It's nice to know somebody's out there looking out for him.
I like your face. I mean, I like seeing your face.
So do you. I mean, I do, too. I like seeing you, too.
Lori regards him with a warm smile, then walks away with her groceries. Hawkins turns to the cashier.
Hi.
Lori exits the store with a wide grin.
Hey!
A middle-aged woman spots her.
What you smiling about?
What did you buy at the store?
Sandra sits in a wheelchair nearby.
I'm sorry.
I don't understand.
Do you see what he did to my sister? He killed her husband. He stabbed her. Took her voice. She cannot speak because of you. You were her neighbor. And you don't even know her name, do you? You tempted and you provoked that man when you should have left him alone.
Lori frowns and the woman steps away. Hawkins stands by his cart.
Lori.
Lori turns and walks away. Sitting in her truck, she wears a troubled expression.
Hey.
Hawkins looks in.
You okay?
Yeah.
I would like to see those cherry blossoms. I think you'd like them too.
At night, the muffler on Allison's car shakes as she drives with Corey.
I think the man who escaped Smith Grove in 1978 was not the same man who killed all those people. The real Michael Myers was murdered that night, and the heavy breather with the mask was the same man who poisoned Pope John Paul I.
She changes the station. A Halloween party takes place in a dimly lit bar. Wearing the black cat mask with a matching outfit, Allison arrives with Corey. He wears normal clothing and a smiling scarecrow mask. Dressed as a red devil, Allison's work friend approaches.
I thought I missed you.
She notices Corey.
Hi.
I'm a scarecrow.
What?
Shark, I'm a scarecrow.
He's meant to be scary.
Allison turns to Corey.
I'll be right back, okay? Get us a drink.
She pats him on the arm, then heads off with her red-haired friend. A man with a bushy beard bumps Corey. He reveals open condoms in his coat.
Scarecrow! See anything you like?
Allison approaches her brunette friend at the bar.
Hey, Lindsay. Two vodka sodas.
Lindsay, guess who Allison's scarecrow is?
The guy that fucked the old lady at the nursing home.
Deb, drop it.
I'm kidding. It's actually Corey Cunningham, the guy that killed that kid.
Don't listen to her, Allison. You can be with whoever you want to be with.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm with him.
Carrying two drinks, Allison leaves her friends and joins Corey. She gives him one of the drinks. They share a look, then each take a long swig. Allison exhales and looks up at him. Working behind the bar, Lindsay pours drinks. She spots Allison and Corey on the dance floor. A strobe light flashes over the partiers. Corey backs up as Allison dances energetically. Shrugging his shoulders, he joins in. They playfully dance together. In a photo booth, Allison laughs as the camera flashes. On the dance floor, she takes off her cat mask and headbangs. Glimpses alternate between them on the dance floor and posing in the photo booth. Corey takes off his sweater and mask, then dances over to a pool table. He leaves his mask and sweater on the table and dances back to Allison. A red light shines over the partiers, and the strobe light continues to flash. Corey drops to his knees. In the photo booth, they both smile. On the dance floor, Allison leans over him. Corey lies down on his back. He kicks his legs and moves his arms. Allison grins. She runs her hands over his face. Laughing, Corey gets to his feet. He grabs a sweater off the pool table. Leaving his scarecrow mask behind, he walks away. Allison continues dancing. Corey approaches the bar.
Hey man, can I get a beer?
As Corey sips his beer, Jeremy's mom looks over. She grins as he notices her.
Is your dancing? Are you having a good time?
He looks nervous.
Sorry
for killing my son.
Glaring, she steps close to him.
I wake up every day and I can't get past the pain. It kills me. Do you understand? You think you can come? No, you don't understand. If you think you can come here and take off your little mask and have a good time.
Corey backs away.
I know you. I know it was no accident.
As Corey hurries off, Lindsay goes to Jeremy's mom.
Evil people, evil.
Glaring, Corey leaves. Allison goes outside.
Corey!
A vehicle nearly hits him.
Corey, watch out! Corey!
She follows him next to a street.
Corey! Stop! Talk to me!
Why'd you take me in there? It's why I don't go out.
What?
You threw me in the middle of it, and then you... Where were you?
I didn't know what was happening in there. I was just trying to help you to just...
I'm not your fucking project, Allison!
Corey, I know! Okay, I know what it's like to have everybody looking at you, thinking that they know you, thinking that they know what you've been through, but they don't. But when I look at you, when I saw you the other day, I just saw a person just trying to figure it the fuck out. Trying to wake up every day, not scared and alone.
But the difference, Allison, between me and you, is that people look at me like, who is this guy? Who is this monster? And they look at you like they see you like a survivor.
What are you talking about?
I get it. You survived Michael Myers. You're a hero with your struggles, and ask anyone. I'm the psycho babysitter. I'm the fucking kid killer. And you think you can fix me. But you can't.
She holds out her hands.
I'll spare you the heartache.
Corey walks away. Tensing her face tearfully, Allison gazes after him. She brings her hands to her forehead. A full moon glows in the night sky. On the overpass, Corey walks beside the concrete railing. Terry and his friends pull up in the black convertible.
Corey!
Terry and Billy get out.
Hey, cool kid.
What's up? Where are you going?
There you are, man. I've been looking for you.
Terry.
I want to apologize. So what do you say, Corey, huh? How about this? Handshakes and friendship.
Terry extends his hand to Corey.
Don't leave him hanging, dude.
Terry nods. As Corey steps past him, Terry knocks him down.
Hey! What is your problem with this kid?
This guy fucked up the LeBaron.
Hell yeah.
Dollar store designer friend? Oh.
Billy steps on Corey's glasses.
Hey, let me help you out. Come on.
He shoves Corey onto the car. Corey pulls the pocket knife.
Whoa, whoa. Get the fuck back!
Hey.
Get back! Get back!
I'm just trying to help.
Get back!
You gonna murder us same way you killed that kid?
Billy knocks the knife away.
You're a psycho bitch.
You don't know what you're talking about! You don't know what you're talking about. Hey. You just act like a goddamn asshole because your father treats you like one. It's contagious, right?
Shit.
What did you just say to me?
That's right.
I know what it looks like when somebody hates you. Your father fucking hates you.
Hmm? He hates me?
Billy grabs Corey and they struggle.
Hey.
Corey stumbles back into Terry, who shoves him over the railing.
He hates me?
Terry!
Oh, shit!
The teens peer down at him.
Oh, my God. Terry, what did you do?
He fell.
Little dick busted it.
Is he dead? Go down and look.
You go down and look. I didn't push nobody. He fell.
Bullshit.
He fell?
Yeah, that's my story. Get out of here.
They return to the car.
Who's the psycho now, Terry? Who's the psycho?
Prick deserved it.
Get in the car, Margo.
Kill the kid, man.
Come on.
Corey lies on the ground below the overpass. The homeless man sits nearby with a small campfire. Someone yanks Corey away. The pocket knife sticks out of the ground. Slowly, the homeless man peers over his shoulder.
Now my hands to the door.
He watches as Corey gets pulled into the storm sewer outflow pipe. At home, Allison bangs on the microwave. Lori enters.
Hey, what's happening?
I can't get this fucking thing to turn
on. Okay, take a breath. Okay,
just let me be mad. Why can't I be mad?
You can.
Lori tries the plug.
You can be mad. You can be very, very mad. And you can smash things. Just be careful. It's addictive.
She turns the microwave on, then faces her granddaughter. Allison leans on the kitchen island. She gazes at the photo booth strip of her and Corey.
You were right. I liked him.
The food in the microwave explodes. In the dark and gloomy storm sewer, rats scurry about. Corey sits against a short concrete wall with his head turned to the side. He watches a rat creep toward him, then turn and walk away. With a dazed expression, he slowly rubs his bandaged hand over his face. In a spacious area, soft sunlight filters in from storm drain grates overhead. Metal bars cover a tunnel. Limping into the area, Corey looks around. He spots a metal ladder on the wall, leading up to one of the grates. Behind him, more sunlight shines in from the sewer's large, round outflow pipe. Turning away from the ladder, Corey stops as he notices the opening. He walks toward it. He turns around. A hand shoots out from a wall, grabbing Corey's throat. He stares in shock at Michael Myers, who stands in a crumbling stone alcove. The killer's pale, weathered mask bears sunken eye holes. Michael watches Corey tremble as he struggles to breathe. The killer slowly tilts his head. A close view shows Michael's face reflected in Corey's glassy eye. They stare at each other. Rapid flashes show Jeremy lying dead, his mom screaming, and Michael's masked face. Terry shoves Corey off the overpass, and Jeremy plummets past the stairs. In the sewer, Corey moves away from the killer's grip. Silhouetted by the outflow pipe, Corey kneels and looks back. He crawls out of the pipe and scoots away from the opening. With a disturbed expression, he gets to his feet beneath the overpass. Stepping closer, he grips the large metal outflow pipe. He wears a square ring on his pinky finger. Brow furrowed, Corey peers down the pipe at the dark sewer beyond. The bearded homeless man grabs him from behind.
You see that man in there?
He takes people in there now and then.
The man wipes his mouth.
Why'd he let you live? I say you go back in there and you get me that man. I'm Michael Myers.
He flicks open the pocket knife, and Corey grabs his hand. With a stunned expression, Corey leans against the homeless man. As they struggle, Corey falls backwards and yanks the bloody knife out of the man's torso. Corey scrambles away. Trembling, he stares at the dead man and gets to his feet. He throws the bloody pocket knife. Corey moves under the overpass as he backs away from the corpse. Arriving home, Corey heads upstairs.
Hey! Where have you been?
His mom tries to stop him.
I have been worried sick!
He shuts himself in the bathroom, then runs his bloody hand through his messy hair.
I'm talking to you!
He takes off his sweater, revealing large bruises on his back. He removes his pants, then regards his wounded face in the mirror. He turns on the sink, then quickly unwraps the bandage on his hand. Now soaking wet, he wipes condensation off the mirror. Corey stares at himself with a dark expression. At the hospital, Deb faces Allison.
No hard feelings about the promotion, right?
Of course not. You deserve it.
I thought for sure Dr. Mathis was going to make you the charge nurse.
Deb, can I speak to you a minute?
Deb shoots Allison a look, then joins Dr. Mathis. From the nurse's station, Allison briefly watches them through a window. She wears an irritated look. At home, Lori paces in her office.
People create their own stories and make their own choices.
She looks at photos.
They believe what they want to believe.
She types.
I'm hopeful with perspective that my experience will help others heal.
Corey rides his motorcycle.
You have to ask yourself, am I in control or do the elements control me? Life or death? Suicide? Or cherry blossoms?
Lori looks toward the windows. Stepping over, she stares outside with a troubled expression. A view from outside shows her in the upstairs window as the curtains lightly billow. Standing partly behind a large bush, Corey watches her from the street. Lori takes anxious breaths. Stepping outside, she hurries off the porch steps and down the front walk. She finds the street and sidewalk empty. Corey appears behind her.
Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. I'm just waiting for Allison.
Lori stares at him in shock.
Corey?
Allison looks down from the porch.
Everything okay?
Lori nods.
I got jumped on the way home last night. These guys...
Allison regards the bruises on his face and neck. He turns to Lori.
Those kids from the gas station that were messing with me. I tried to stand up for myself and they,
She stares back at him.
I'm sorry.
Looking over at Allison, he approaches the porch steps.
I just came because I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to say that I'm sorry and there's no excuse, but if you could please, if you could just take a walk with me. Please.
Corey slowly lowers his tearful gaze. Allison walks down the steps past him. In slow motion, she heads down the sidewalk. Corey glances at Lori as he follows. Looking deeply concerned, she stares after them. The pair walks past a strip mall.
I killed someone.
Allison halts and Corey keeps walking. Stopping, he gazes back at her. Corey approaches and they stand face to face. Allison studies him. He offers his hand and she looks down at it. She takes his hand and looks him in the eye. Climbing through a window, Corey enters the old white mansion where Jeremy's family lived. Roger's old piano sits in the middle of the room. Corey helps Allison inside, then walks through the abandoned home. She steps to the dusty piano and reaches toward the keys. She follows Corey.
We were making paper planes, but he wanted to watch a monster movie.
He wanders through the rooms.
Everything happens so fast.
Allison stops, and her shadow lingers on a wall.
Just wanted it to be a fun night.
She steps to the foyer.
That's all, just good night.
Corey kneels by the bloodstain below the winding staircase. He gazes upward.
And then it all went bad.
A spinning view from below shows the winding staircase.
I heard what happened. I know it sounds crazy, but when people would talk about it, it was like I knew you. Like I was looking for you. And then she brought you to me.
Corey looks down from the top. And Allison peers up from the second level. At home, Corey's mom pours hot water from a kettle.
Has he done something bad?
She faces Lori.
I don't understand why you're here. No, no. He's seeing my granddaughter. I introduced them, actually. Your granddaughter should be so lucky as to be with a boy like Corey. He's handsome. He's sensitive. I don't like it when he stays out of mind with girls, but he's grown. He can do what he wants.
Lori wears a thoughtful look.
Yes.
She joins Corey's mom in the dining room.
I know he's had his difficulties. My son. This town turned against him after the accident with Jeremy Allen. They would have felt for him. They would have helped him heal. But because your boogeyman disappeared, they needed a new one.
Holding back tears, Lori nods. She steps to the door and leaves.
I'm sorry.
At night, Allison and Corey sit in a diner.
After my mom and dad were killed, I just wanted to burn it all to the ground and get away from Haddonfield.
Why not leave? Why stay?
All my memories are here.
Corey eyes her.
I think both your parents got killed and your grandma feels guilty about it, so she's making you her child.
If you could have seen her before therapy sobering up and me, I'm just terrified to think what would happen if she were all alone if I left.
So would you gotta stay here, protect her from herself forever?
A waitress brings food.
Look, I'm sorry I lost my head at the party. And I walked away. That was a mistake.
Corey holds her hand.
When I looked at you, I...
His eyes glisten with tears.
I know I can tell you the truth. I'm not afraid of these people.
I'm not afraid anymore.
I'll be right back.
You tell me that you want to burn it down. Or you tell me you want to burn it down.
Hey, twice in 1 week. Pretty cool.
Doug joins them.
I dig it. Hey, you said you were going to call. You were going to call, but you didn't call. It.
No, I owe you a call.
Did I do something wrong?
I'm with someone.
Oh, oops. Sorry for that. Sorry for the intrusion. Well, you know, it's
Joe Grillo's. Hey, Joe. Hey, Joe Grillo's birthday today.
And Joe Ross, he made a sponge cake. You two want to stop by and get a slice after whatever you guys are doing.
Good.
Okay, you're good. Well, let me tell you, it's changed your mind.
He said we're good.
Allison and Doug stare at Corey. Doug wipes his nose.
Hey, buddy, you got a problem?
We're good.
Corey keeps his gaze lowered.
Oh, shit. Allison.
Doug leans over her.
So you call Mr. Aggravated manslaughter at night when you can't sleep?
She shies away.
When you see the boogeyman in your nightmares, you feel safe with this guy.
Pushing off the table, Corey steps close to Doug and glares intensely. Allison looks anxious, and other people stare. Doug puts up his hand.
Hey, man. Listen around.
He returns to his friends.
Allison? Nah. Psycho.
Good, Mulaney? It's all good about Vegas. We need to go kick somebody today?
No, I got this.
Sipping his beer, Doug stares back at them. Corey sits beside Allison in their booth.
Just burn it all to the ground.
He puts his arm around her.
I'll light the match.
Corey looks toward Doug. Riding his motorcycle, Corey stares ahead with a cold expression. Allison sits on the back, gazing at him. She holds her arms around his chest. A close view shows the headlight as he parks outside Lori's house. Allison gets off the bike, but lingers at Corey's side. She smiles, and he pulls her in for a kiss. Allison grips the back of his head. They stop kissing and she gazes at him. Corey glances away. She playfully bites his nose and they share a grin. Allison kisses him again, then hurries to the front porch. Smiling, he watches her go. Down the street, someone watches him from a parked car. Corey rides away. The car follows him with its headlights shining. Corey rides his motorcycle with a calm expression. The car continues following him through town. Corey parks beneath the overpass. He stares off. The car following him stops in a nearby parking lot. Getting out, Doug looks at the area below the overpass. He glances over his shoulder as he approaches. Corey's bike sits unattended by the concrete pillars. Doug turns on a large flashlight. Adjusting his grip, he holds it overhead as he scans the dark area. He sweeps the light past the motorcycle. Stepping around the bike, Doug continues ahead. He shines the bright flashlight over trash and a small tent. He notices another tent nearby. Inside, a dim light casts a figure's shadow onto the wall. Doug lowers his flashlight. He turns it off as he slowly approaches the tent. Turning the flashlight back on, he quickly opens the tent's zipper. The homeless man's body falls out. Corey wraps his brown leather jacket around Doug's head. The men struggle and fall over. Corey tries to pin him down and Doug punches him off. Running away, Corey enters the storm sewer outflow pipe. Doug scrambles to his feet and shines his light inside.
Hey! You don't fuck with Doug the Lady!
Crawling on his hands and knees, Doug slowly makes his way into the dark sewer. He emerges from the pipe. Standing up, he scans the area with his flashlight. He startles and whips around, then continues inside.
Where are you? Huh? You say it was an accident. But I know what you did.
He scans the light over the walls. Doug looks behind him.
Fuck your face, you little shit.
He stops near an alcove, where someone crouches in the shadows. Doug shines his light onto the outline of a human face resembling Michael's mask on the rocky wall.
The fuck is that?
Turning, he scans his light over the dark area. Corey stands on a ledge behind him. Doug shines the light onto him, then smirks. Corey smiles back. Michael emerges. He slams Doug into a wall. Doug kicks him away. Grabbing the flashlight, Corey strikes Doug with it. Doug collapses, holding his head. Corey goes to Michael.
Help. Show me how to do it.
Michael struggles to stand.
Get up!
He slowly gets to his feet as Corey watches him. Reaching for a natural rock wall, Michael pulls a rusty chef's knife from a small crevice. Doug grabs Corey. Corey strikes him, then holds him upright to face Michael. The killer lumbers closer. Dirt and rocky debris covers one side of his weathered mask. He slices Doug's throat. Blood spurts out. Corey falls back with Doug on top of him. He gets to his knees and holds Doug's body. Michael staggers closer and stabs Doug in the chest. Staring down at his victim, Michael shudders. Corey watches him intently. Michael repeatedly plunges the blade into Doug. Corey gazes up at the murderer as Doug goes limp. Michael straightens his hunched posture. Corey scoots out from under Doug. Michael watches as Corey stands and moves away. At home, Allison walks downstairs to the front door.
Who is it?
It's me.
She opens it for Corey.
Oh my God, are you okay?
I don't know what's happening to me.
He steps inside, and she watches him with a worried look. Corey paces anxiously.
What's going on?
He pins her to the doorframe, and his hand hovers close to her throat.
Look at me.
He steps away and sits on the couch. Allison slowly walks over.
Who did this to you? Hey. Look at me.
Did Michael Myers let you live? Or did you escape?
Allison tenses. He looks up at her with teary eyes. Brushing back his curly hair, she looks at a scrape on his forehead.
Does it hurt?
No.
My mother saved me.
He studies her. Outside in the driveway, Lori gets out of her truck. Through a window, she spots Allison leading Corey upstairs. They kiss as they move out of view. Beside a tree nearby, Michael watches Lori. He leaves, and she looks in his direction. With a furrowed brow, Lori stares back at the house. Daytime. In bed, Allison sleeps beside Corey. Lying awake, he gazes at her, then lifts his head off the pillow. He looks across the room at his scarecrow mask on the dresser. Getting out of bed, Corey grabs the mask. At the hospital, Deb puts on lipstick.
You're fucking him, aren't you? It's like the perfect story of Haddonfield in a way. Cute young girl falls for local creep. Imagine if your grandmother had fallen in love with Michael Myers, but she didn't. I heard she stabbed him in the neck with a fucking knitting needle.
What's your problem, Deb? You talk to me like I'm not even here. Do you ever just shut your goddamn mouth?
Allison shuts a drawer.
I know, right?
I know, I talk too much. I just get so excited about all that boogeyman bullshit.
Mathis talks on the phone.
I'm vetoing that trade. Your second receiver for Mark's last place defense reeks of collusion.
He holds out folders and Allison nearly drops them. Watching him walk away with Deb, she slams the folders down at the bar.
I keep seeing his eyes.
Are we talking about Michael or this kid?
Michael's eyes in Corey. Lindsay, I was so sure.
Lindsay looks across the bar.
Just like the first time.
Hey, Roger.
She takes Lori's hands.
There's someone I want you to meet.
Lori faces Roger.
I always liked Corey. You know, some kids you can tell they're a pain in the ass, but Corey was a good kid. You know, I just couldn't imagine he'd be capable of hurting anyone on purpose.
He plays pool.
But with the trial, I just started spinning with theories. And eventually I thought, give it up. You're never going to get closure. There's no such thing. A couple of years go by. I'd see him every now and then, see the way people avoided him or how they made faces behind his back, which, if I'm honest, pissed me off. Because I felt like they took my pain, my despair, and they made it about them.
Lori looks down thoughtfully.
And then yesterday I'm on my way to work, there he is.
In a flashback.
And I think, I'm going to say something, prove my wife wrong. Let's find a way to forgive this kid. And I pull up next to him, and he looks at me.
Corey looks into the car.
And it's not him.
He wears a vacant expression.
At least not in the eyes.
Roger drives away.
And I don't know, man. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up.
In the bar, Roger looks down.
Right then, I felt like I got my answer. The kid who used to mow our lawn didn't kill my son. I know that. But the guy I saw on the side of the road was down a dark path. Did the town do this to him after the accident? Or was it always there?
Lori walks away. At an upscale home, Dr. Mathis enters with Deb.
I just let her hold my job, don't you? Oh, my God. All right, Alexa. Play Tell Me With Your Eyes by Rob Galbraith.
Here's Tell Me With Your Eyes
this
by
house is so rich.
Oh.
Deb opens glass doors to a courtyard with a glowing pool.
Maybe I have been waiting all day for this.
I've been saving this bottle of Au Bon Climat. You look so fucking hot at the office today.
Mind if I...
Bedroom's down the hall. Clean up, take a shower. In fact, I'll meet you in there.
He uncorks the bottle.
Yes, yes.
Deb looks seductively over her shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wearing a form-fitting blue dress, she saunters down a dimly lit hallway. Deb grins as she enters the primary bedroom. A gift box with a white lid and red ribbon sits on the bed. She sets down her purse and picks up the card. It reads... Congratulations on the promotion. She opens the box and pulls out a light purple silk robe.
Holy shit. Is there a doctor in the house?
Outside by the pool, Mathis carries a tray. He sets it by the bottle of wine on a table with a fire pit in the center. In the bathroom, Deb turns on the shower. Wearing the robe, she feels the temperature of the water.
Dr. Mathis!
She turns off the shower.
Dr. Mathis?
She slowly steps into the bedroom. Sliding glass doors lead to the courtyard pool. Deb opens one of the doors. She steps outside.
Dr. Mathis?
The orange glow from the fire pit table flickers on Deb's face. She cautiously approaches the patio furniture and spots the shattered wine bottle on the ground. She goes to a switch, turning on the courtyard lights. Wearing the scarecrow mask, Corey stabs Mathis with a corkscrew. He holds plastic over Mathis's head as he stabs him repeatedly. Corey runs at Deb, who flees inside. She slams the door on his injured hand. He pulls his hand away and she locks him outside. Corey bangs on the door as she runs into the bathroom and grabs her phone. As she makes a call, she looks back into the bedroom. Corey stops banging on the door and stares at her calmly. Michael stands behind Deb. Grabbing her neck, he shoves her across the room and pins her against a painting on the wall. Watching, Corey lifts up his scarecrow mask. Deb kicks her feet as Michael lifts her up. Corey unwraps the bandage from his bloody hand and flexes his fingers. Michael turns his head slightly. Deb glances wide-eyed at Corey as she claws and kicks at Michael. He plunges his rusty knife into her chest. Through the glass door, Corey watches intently. Deb glances over, then goes limp. Corey presses his hand against the door. As Michael lets go of Deb, the knife keeps her body pinned to the large painting. The killer takes a step back and tilts his head. Blood drips down Deb's foot and onto the floor. Corey wears a captivated expression. He rides his motorcycle through town. His curly hair blows in the wind. Sitting behind him, Allison reaches up and touches his bottom lip. Corey grins. She runs her hand over his shaggy hair and they both laugh. Holding onto his waist, she rests her cheek on his shoulder. Corey grins. They both playfully scream. Red lights flash on the radio tower. It stands over the WURG radio station building. Corey and Allison sit on the building's roof, bathed in the red glow from the station's neon sign.
After the accident, I'll ride my bike over here and I'd sit up on this roof.
Corey holds her close.
And I'd look up at that tower. I wonder if I could climb at the top. It was summoning me. Like a watchtower, a beacon, calling me to live my old life. To be happy again.
Allison touches her parents' rings and gazes up at the tower.
I have something like that, too.
It always gave me hope, you know, things... Well, maybe somehow things will go back to the way they used to be. Before everything changed.
She examines the sutured wound on his hand.
Infected.
I gotta get away from everybody who knows me. But I don't want to go alone.
Corey moves away from her and straddles the edge of the roof. His brown leather jacket rests on her lap.
Corey, come on. Stop.
I think you're scared that you don't have enough bandages to keep me together.
He slides off.
Corey, what are you...
She looks down and spots him on a ledge several feet below.
Are you okay? What, are you insane? What, are you trying to kill yourself?
I'm not interested in immortality.
He drops roughly 10 feet to the street below, landing on his back.
Oh.
Willie the Kid comes out of the radio station.
What the hell is going on out here? Yo, this is private property. Not safe to be doing whatever the hell you do.
Corey gets to his feet.
Corey Cunningham, what you doing out here, you ugly motherfucker?
Corey, stop it.
Scare all the kids.
You stop.
Willie looks to Allison.
I don't know who the fuck you talking to, but I know who you are. Yeah, I know the Lori Stroll story. She teased a man with brain damage and then he snapped. Look at you. You gonna make a little name for yourself now, huh? Walking around with this dumb bitch right here.
You never shut up. I hear his voice everywhere.
Oh, you goddamn right you do. And once Willie get in the air, it's like your favorite song stuck in your head.
Willie starts toward the door.
Y'all get the hell up off my property before I fuck y'all up.
Allison and Corey watch him go inside.
All right. You're right. Let's do it. I don't want to be in Haddonfield anymore. I want to be with you.
They hug, and Corey stares at the radio station. He squeezes her tightly, and she buries her face in his neck. Down the street, Lori watches them from her parked car. Corey stares off tensely as he holds Allison close. At home, Corey's mom glares at him.
I
can smell her on you. She's trying to take you away from me, isn't she? That's why you go every night. Well, I say, go. Well, you go right now! Get out of my house!
She slaps him.
Oh, no. No.
She grabs Corey and kisses him on the lips. He pulls back and she walks away. Corey stares downward, then gazes after his mother.
I hope you find love.
He turns to Ronald. Cut to black. Text appears, October 31st. Daytime, an exterior view shows the old white mansion. A sign on the weathered chain-link fence reads, "Keep out." Inside, Corey sleeps on the floor over the faded bloodstain. He stirs awake.
Allison?
Sitting nearby, Lori taps the back of her chair against the wall. She holds a paper airplane.
It's nice to see you.
She tosses the airplane as Corey looks over his shoulder at her. Turning away, he stares off.
You know there are two kinds of evil. There's the evil that exists as an external force that threatens the well-being of the tribe. Survival depends on understanding and awareness and fear of physical threat to our daily lives. The other kind of evil lives inside us, like a sickness or an infection. It's more dangerous because we may not know we're infected.
Turning around, he gazes across the large foyer at her. Lori leans back in her chair.
Am I a bad person? Are you?
Well, we're both fucked up.
He smiles.
I want to help you, Corey. Let me help you. Or let me find help for you. You can't have her. Allison is not equipped for this relationship. And I will not let her get hurt. So stay the fuck away.
You started this! You brought me in. You invited me.
He gets to his feet.
But you're the one to blame.
He approaches the staircase.
You want to do it or you want me to?
Corey takes a seat on the steps. He faces Lori, who sits by the front door.
If I can't have her, no one will. You want to help Allison, let her live her life. She has me now.
Lori regards him with a deep frown. Turning his head, he stares off through the banister railing.
You should give in. You should surrender to that feeling you had the first time you ever looked into his eyes.
Lori remains in the reclined position in her chair.
You secretly hope Michael comes back for you.
He smiles as he continues to stare off.
I'm the psycho. You're the freak show.
He looks over to find the chair empty and Lori gone. Corey marches into the next room to the open window by the piano. He grabs a fireplace poker as he passes by. He peers outside, then wanders back through the room. He looks around the mostly empty house. He approaches the old piano. He hits it with the poker. Later, he rides his motorcycle through a puddle at the hospital.
What's wrong?
We need to leave.
I can't right now. I'm working.
Tonight, then. What do you meet me at 9 o'clock? In the diner off 74. We need to talk about your grandmother.
Allison looks concerned.
She wants to kill me.
What?
Yeah, I can't take it anymore. It's time to say goodbye to Haddonfield.
Under the overpass, Corey parks his bike. He quickly crawls into the dark sewer.
You got something I need.
He marches up to Michael and grabs him by the shoulders. They struggle and Michael shoves Corey down. Sunlight filters in from above as the two killers wrestle around the dingy sewer.
Corey takes Michael down. He gets on top of him.
You're just a man, and I always manage. What are you gonna do now?
Corey rips Michael's pale mask off his head, then crawls out of the sewer with it clutched in his hand. Michael lies still in the shadows. He sits upright and turns his head, partially showing his disfigured face. Costumed children go trick-or-treating. At the gas station, Terry and his friends exit the store.
I don't want to go to your house, man. Your dad always fucking yells at us.
Terry finds the word psycho scratched into the hood of his car.
Yeah, shoot.
What the fuck?
He locks eyes with Corey, who rides away on his motorcycle.
He's dead! Get it!
The teens get in the car. At home, Allison zips a bag and grabs Corey's leather jacket from the hall closet. She puts it on and gazes off. Lori stands in Allison's bedroom. Allison enters.
Can you find what you're looking for?
I imagine you're going on a wonderful trip. Were you going to tell me?
What difference does it make?
It makes a big difference, Allison. I feel he is capable of real harm.
Is that what bothers you? Is it suspicion or paranoia? Intuition? An inkling? You got an inkling?
I went to his home. I met his mother.
I know, he told me.
Allison packs clothing.
So what, you're stalking him now?
No!
And you're threatening him. What did you say to him?
I see the same thing in him that I saw in Michael.
Michael Myers is who you are.
You're not listening to me, Allison. I am trying to protect you.
I don't want your protection!
But you can have a good life, Allison. A good life, just not with him.
Allison pushes her out.
You pretend like you moved on, but it's bullshit. You're actually just obsessed with death, like it's some sort of game. And you're not gonna rest until you finish it or until everybody else is as fucking miserable as you are. I need to get out of here before this town kills the one person that actually makes me feel something.
She shuts the door.
He is on a dark path. I'm not gonna let this happen to you. You have to believe me.
Believe you?
She opens it.
You want me to believe you? Because of the hysteria that you caused when I trusted you? My friends are dead. My parents are dead. You're the one that's capable of fucking harm.
In his office at the salvage yard, Ronald watches Hard Target on his laptop. He wears headphones over his ears. Outside in the salvage yard, Terry and his friends arrive in the convertible.
You sure he turned in here, dude?
Yeah,
it's like it's high out of something. It's way worse.
His work is a dump.
It actually is a dump.
Okay, no, but seriously, where is he?
It's the bike.
Should we pull over? This will be so crazy.
They pass a tow truck.
Billy, can you hurry up? You're squishing me.
God.
Where'd he go?
I'm out, Corey.
Someone shuts the gate.
Corey, I just want to kiss and make up, my man. Come on.
Stop being a punk.
That's Corey.
Oh, you know
what happens when you mess with my dad's car.
Can we hurry this up, man?
Terry spots Corey's motorcycle.
I got an idea. Billy, back the car up.
Okay.
Grab that chain. Let's go.
Terry, there's somebody in the office.
Stacy grabs a chain.
I need a chicken shit. Run it through the wheel. All right? Okay. We're going to tie it to the back of the car, and then we'll drag it until there's nothing left. Dusty ass bike.
Terry kicks over the motorcycle.
Let's go, Billy. Billy!
Come on, Terry. Hurry up, man. Someone's here.
Billy!
Terry jogs over to his car.
Come on, Billy, let's get this punk. Let's go. Oh, my God, Billy. Billy, what are you trying to do, man? Suck your own... Oh, my God!
He finds Billy with a drumstick through his eye.
Terry? What's wrong?
Billy's dead!
What? What are you talking about?
Headlights shine onto Stacy.
Stacy
runs. Margot stares at the tow truck, then flees as it accelerates toward her. Stacy tugs at the locked gate. Stacy climbs over the fence. Margot catches up to her and starts to climb over. Terry watches as the truck smashes into the gate, pinning Margot beneath it. In his office, Ronald removes his headphones and turns to look out the window. He stares outside at the dark salvage yard. Terry pounds on the window.
Help, help, help!
Outside, Stacy runs to the truck.
What?
Margot lies pinned beneath the fence in the vehicle. A low view shows the driver's boots as they get out of the truck. Clutching a large pipe wrench, they approach Stacy. She looks up in horror.
Stay here.
Inside, Ronald hands Terry a rifle, then leaves. Holding a handgun at his side, Ronald walks out of the garage. He spots Corey's motorcycle on the ground. He walks toward the tow truck by the entrance and finds Margot struggling under the chain-link fence.
Help me!
Hey, hey.
Hold still! Hold still!
Ronald looks up to find Corey holding Michael's mask.
I got you!
Terry aims the rifle.
I got you, you fucking psycho!
No, no!
Ronald stands in front of Corey and gets shot in the head. Running over, Terry finds Stacy's bloody body.
Stacy.
He looks at Ronald's body. He finds Margot under the fence.
Margot! Oh my God, oh my God.
Where's Stacy?
Stacy's dead.
You're dead too.
Corey grabs the rifle. He bashes Terry with it, then ignites the flame on an oxyacetylene torch. He holds the torch to Terry's face as Margot watches in horror. Wearing Michael's pale mask, Corey looms over Margot. He stomps on her head. He runs over her body as he drives the truck away. The red taillights glow in the darkness. Someone enters the house as Corey's mom watches a cooking show.
So, the blueberries obviously are really hot. And then when it's all ready to go, we'll go and freeze the custard and then whip
Ronald!
The
blueberries.
The intruder's point of view shows them entering the kitchen.
I have laundry.
Opening a drawer, the intruder grabs a large kitchen knife. Reflected in the glass doors of a cabinet, Corey's mom spots the intruder. Wearing coveralls and Michael's mask, Corey raises the knife over her. She turns.
The hotline is open and we are taking requests. Songs for the resurrection. What's going to get our moms out? Give us something to scream about.
At the radio station.
Carla, you're on air.
Exploiting these tragedies. There are three missing people right now in Haddonfield.
Corey arrives outside.
So when fighting monsters, you yourself do not become a monster. For when you gaze long into the abyss gazes also into you.
Nietzsche also said, without music...
Willie ends the call and taps a control.
Life would be a mistake.
Adjusting his headphones, he bobs his head as a record spins on a turntable. Corey enters the station lobby in Michael's mask. At the front desk, a blonde woman makes a chain of paper ghosts. She looks at Corey.
Can I help you?
In the studio, Willie dances in his seat with his headphones on. Behind him, Corey attacks the receptionist. The windows in front of Willie reflect Corey as he enters the studio. Willie turns around. Corey slams Willie's face against the desk. Willie's teeth fall out, and his tongue hangs out of his bloody and mutilated mouth. Using scissors, Corey cuts off his tongue. He slams Willie's head down and leaves. The severed tongue spins on top of the record, bumping the needle. Corey passes through the lobby in silhouette. Parking outside the diner, Allison stares at her car radio. She shuts it off. She enters the mostly empty diner. Allison scans the tables. Later, she sits alone in a booth, stirring a drink in a styrofoam cup. She stares off. She watches two people step inside. Checking her phone, she finds an incoming call from Lori. Allison ignores it. At home, Lori stands in the kitchen.
Allison.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I said. I'm sorry, please. And I just want you to come home.
At home, Corey's mom's body sits slumped on the floor. Blood stains her shirt. Standing at the front door, Allison takes out her phone. She types text messages to Corey. Multiple unanswered messages read, I'm here. 9 o'clock, right? Where are you? You good? She puts her phone away, then touches her parents' wedding rings on her gold necklace. Allison stares off with a troubled expression. At home, Lori turns off the kitchen light and walks to the living room. She passes by the large doorways to the empty foyer and staircase. A liquor bottle and glass sit on the coffee table. Grabbing the glass, Lori tilts back her head as she finishes the drink. She turns off the front porch light, then slowly walks back to the living room. She leans on the wide doorframe. Walking upstairs, she carries the liquor bottle and glass in one hand. She reaches the second floor and stops, her eyes shifting thoughtfully. Lori enters her office. She sets the liquor bottle and glass on the desk. She looks at a jack-o'-lantern and a full pumpkin on the mantel. Using a grill lighter, Lori reaches into the jack-o'-lantern's mouth to light a candle inside it. An exterior view shows the light on in the upstairs office. Inside, Lori pours herself a drink. Her manuscript sits on the desk before her. She downs the liquor and stares at the typed pages. Lori looks through them briefly, then gently runs her hand over the top page. She stares off distantly. Opening a cabinet, she unlocks a small safe inside. She takes out a snub-nosed revolver. She gazes sadly at the small gun, then sets it on a book. Her phone's lock screen displays a photo of Karen smiling. A view from the staircase shows her making a call.
Yes, I would like to report a suicide. 1206 Mills End Road.
Lori sets her glasses on the desk. The office door hangs open behind her. She reaches for her necklace and rips it off. She sets down the delicate chain and cross pendant, then drapes her sweater over the desk chair. A close view shows the revolver. Lori steels herself. She aims the gun at her temple and tenses her face tearfully. She lowers the gun to below her chin. Pacing through the office, she passes the jack-o'-lantern and pumpkin. Someone's point of view moves toward the office doorway. Pumpkin splatters onto the wall. The intruder opens the door to find the shattered pumpkin. Lori aims the gun at Corey.
Did you really think I'd kill myself?
She shoots him, and he topples through the stair railing. Lying in the foyer, he weakly takes off Michael's mask. Lori walks downstairs. Blood drips from Corey's mouth as he tries to crawl. She grabs him by the hair.
I have tried so hard to have compassion and find mercy.
She aims at the wall.
But what's the point?
She aims downward. Kneeling, Corey glares up at her. Lori tosses the empty gun and shrugs.
You came here to kill me, so do it.
He reaches for his knife beside the mask and slides the weapon toward him. Frowning, he stares up at Lori, then turns to the front door. Outside, Allison parks her car in front of the house. Grinning, Corey turns back to Lori.
You know, we all learn the truth about each other eventually.
He holds the bloody knife in his hand.
Did you really think that Allison was going to be with you?
If I can't have her,
He stabs himself in the throat.
You son of a bitch.
Lori yanks out the knife. She holds it in her shaking hand as Allison enters the house. Allison glances from Corey to her grandmother. Lori drops the knife and puts up her hands. Stepping forward, Allison glares at her. Lori cowers.
What did you do? What did you do to him?
No.
Allison drops to her knees and holds her hands over Corey.
No.
Blood oozes from his throat.
What did you do? Corey, come back.
Tears stream down Allison's face. Corey's lifeless eyes remain open. Lori trembles.
You!
Glaring at her, Allison fumbles for the doorknob and hurries out. She lingers on the front porch with her back to the door. Inside, Lori wears a distressed look as she wanders to the dark living room. Rain falls as Allison turns away from the house and heads down the front walk. Inside, Lori leans against the wall and slides to the floor. She spots the revolver nearby and picks it up. Opening the cylinder, she checks the chambers. She snaps it back in place and stares off. Outside, Allison gets into her car. In the house, Lori notices the side door open and takes on a worried look. In the foyer, Michael's mask lies near the bloody knife. A hand reaches out, grabbing the mask. Lori turns her head. A low view shows Michael's boots. As he reaches for the knife, Corey jolts awake. He grabs Michael's wrist. Getting up off the floor, Lori stands against the wall as they struggle in the next room. Michael grips Corey's head in both hands. Straining, Corey stares up at the masked killer. Michael snaps his neck. Lori locks the side door. Michael pulls his hand away from Corey's cheek and takes a step back. Lori slowly walks across the dining room to the dark kitchen. Michael stands over Corey's body in the foyer. Holding the knife, he looks toward the kitchen doorway. Driving her car, Allison approaches a railroad crossing. She spots the radio tower up ahead. Flames rise at its base. Getting out, she stares at the fiery tower. She answers her phone.
Allison, where's Lori? We're responding to a call. She called in a suicide.
Allison's expression becomes alarmed. At the house, Michael strides to the kitchen, holding the bloody knife outward. He stops to look around, then walks slowly toward closed doors leading to a deck. Lori stands huddled in the pantry corner. The pantry door features a decorative grate, giving a partial view of Michael in the kitchen. The killer notices food spinning in the microwave. In the pantry, the pull cord on the window blinds taps against the wooden trim. Lori stops the cord from swinging, and Michael abruptly turns his head. Holding up the knife, he stalks through the kitchen. Lori glances past the door at something across the pantry. The fire extinguisher sits on a high shelf. Michael reaches for the pantry doorknob. The food explodes in the microwave and he turns his head. Lori emerges. She knocks away his knife with the fire extinguisher and bashes him in the head. Michael throws her against the kitchen island. Gripping her hair, he slams her face through a glass cabinet. He throws her to the floor and steps onto her throat. Lori struggles. She kicks Michael's other leg and he stumbles away. Holding her throat, Lori gets to her feet. Michael slams her into the fridge and throws her against the counter. He grabs her from behind and strangles her. Lori tries to reach for a small knife in the sink, but he grabs her wrist. Michael forces her hand to the garbage disposal switch on the wall.
Stop!
She struggles as he lowers her hand into the drain. She headbutts him away. Michael throws her onto the kitchen island and she tumbles over the side. Lori grabs a knitting needle from the floor. Huddled behind the island, she holds the needle close as Michael stalks over. She lunges with it, but he catches her arm. Forcing her down, he slowly stabs the needle into her ear. She grabs at his face, dislodging his mask. As he struggles to adjust the mask, she retrieves the large bloody knife. She stabs Michael's hand, pinning it to the island counter. She hits a stool against his face. He grabs her with his free hand. Glaring, Lori shoves him onto the island and climbs on top of him. Pinning him down, she grabs another knife from a drawer and stabs him in the chest. Michael abruptly sits up, knocking her away. Lori stabs his free hand onto the island, then uses a pan to hammer the knife down. Michael struggles, both hands pinned down by knives. Lori topples the fridge onto his leg. He weakly kicks his other leg toward her. Taking heavy breaths, she glares at him. She reaches her bloody hand into the open drawer and grabs a small knife. Lori drops it and selects a large chef's knife. Changing her grip, she twirls the knife to show Michael his reflection in the blade. He weakly lifts his head. She moves the knife slowly over his mask. Lori pulls the blade away, then stabs him in the side. Michael writhes as she twists the knife. She pulls it out and blood spreads over the counter. Michael turns his head from side to side as Lori reaches for his mask. She pulls it off, revealing his burned and scarred face.
I've run from you. I have chased you.
She holds the chef's knife over him.
I have tried to contain you. I have tried to forgive you.
She rests her hand on his mouth and touches the blade to his cheek.
I thought maybe you were the boogeyman. No, you're just a man who's about to stop breathing.
She slices his throat and blood gushes out. Michael rips his hand free from the knife. He grabs Lori's throat. Her eyes go wide as she struggles to breathe. Michael's head lolls toward her. Lori stares down at him.
Do it. Do it!
As she chokes, rapid glimpses show her encounters with Michael over many years. In the present, Lori closes her eyes. Allison arrives.
No!
She grabs Michael's arm and snaps it.
I'm not gonna let this happen to you.
Lori nods. Allison steps back and Lori grabs onto Michael's bloody arm. She slices his wrist and blood spills out. More blood oozes from his throat and spreads beneath him. His fingers move weakly as Lori holds his hand. Allison looks from their hands to Michael's body. Blood drips from the chef's knife, landing in a puddle on the floor. A reflection in the blood shows Lori holding Michael's hand. His pale mask lies near his head. Outside, Hawkins shoves past deputies.
Stay. Just stay back.
He hurries up the porch steps.
Lori!
Swinging open the door, he spots Corey's body in the foyer. He looks to the kitchen, where Allison keeps her eyes on Michael's corpse. In slow motion, Hawkins approaches. Deputies enter behind him and spread out. Allison looks over at Hawkins. He steps into the dark kitchen and spots Lori standing beside the dead killer. Blood stains her neck and shirt. She looks somberly at Hawkins.
Michael,
He's dead.
Allison steps closer to the body.
I'm not dead enough.
This isn't how we do it.
Outside, they tie Michael to Allison's car.
Where are you taking him?
Time for Haddonfield to start healing.
Let's show them all.
A squad car arrives, and Sheriff Barker steps out. Deputies stand nearby.
This is not how it works.
It is tonight.
They all get in their vehicles. Hawkins uses his radio.
Let's go.
Barker wears a stern expression. In slow motion, the vehicles head off. Michael's body lies atop Allison's car. She looks at Lori in the passenger seat, then stares ahead. Neighbors make phone calls as they watch the passing vehicles. Many civilian cars join in, forming a long line through the streets. Throughout the town, people watch the procession pass by. On a foggy street, deputies move a barricade. Barker's vehicle pulls aside, and Allison leads the procession ahead. She pulls into the salvage yard. On foot, Hawkins and many other townspeople follow her car. Sandra sits in her wheelchair as her sister pushes her. Another survivor, Julian, walks with the crowd. The boy wears a somber expression. Corey's discarded motorcycle lies on the ground nearby. Allison drives slowly up an incline toward various equipment. She stares ahead, then locks eyes with her grandmother. The large crowd gathers around her car. Lori and Allison hold hands as they share a solemn look. Lori turns away and stares off. Allison watches the townspeople reach for her car's roof. They lift Michael's body and pass him along over their heads. The people step back to clear a path in front of Allison's car. Lori walks by the crowd in slow motion. She passes Hawkins. He and the others gaze after her. Bright lights turn on, illuminating the scrap metal shredder. Lori approaches the large machine. She climbs onto the platform where Michael's body lies. Nearby, Allison grabs a switch. Staring down at Michael's corpse, Lori takes a deep breath. Allison flips the switch, and the shredder's thick metal blades rotate. Lori rolls the corpse off the platform. Blood shoots upward as the shredder immediately crushes Michael's body and head. Lori wears a grave expression. Her shoulders heave as she takes a breath. At home, she works in her office.
The body of Michael Myers was disposed of in a midnight procession. There would be no tombstone, no memorial. The mysteries were put to bed, and the story as we told it was to fade with time.
In the dining room, she stares off as she sits with Allison.
You were right about Corey.
Lori looks over at her.
I know he killed those people.
Allison averts her gaze.
He was consumed by evil.
She looks at Lori, who wears a morose expression.
The events of Haddonfield that created so much violence and bloodshed finally had resolve.
Allison holds Lori's hand. At the diner, Allison sits alone. A news report shows several victims.
Reports now confirm that Michael Myers has indeed been killed, dead after an attempted assault of Haddonfield resident Lori Strode. What an incredible story of survival through decades of disturbances in our local community. Finally.
Driving her car, Allison fiddles with her parents' rings. She smiles as she leaves Haddonfield.
New beginnings lay ahead.
Lori types at home.
Fear moves through all of us, and we decide when to surrender. I've said goodbye to my boogeyman, but the truth is evil doesn't die. It changes shape.
She closes the laptop and sets her hands on top of it. She turns her head. Lori opens the front door to find Hawkins walking away. A large bag of produce lies on the porch. Hawkins stops and looks back.
I wanted you to know I was thinking about you. I want to thank you for what you did.
He gestures at the gift.
Enjoy.
Lori looks down at the bag of vegetables. Potted flowers sit beside it. Hawkins smiles at her. Adjusting her robe, she steps outside.
What was it you were saying about those cherry blossoms?
She sits on the porch steps, grimacing slightly. Scratching his brow, Hawkins walks over. He sits beside her. Lori gazes off with a distant expression. Hawkins studies her, then looks away. Kids on bicycles ride past the house. Views inside Lori's home show the staircase, the clean kitchen, and the dining room. In her office, Michael's mask lies on the coffee table. Over black, a title appears. Halloween ends. The word Halloween fades away, and the word ends lingers. Credits roll. Co-producer Jennifer Scudder Trent. Unit production manager Christopher H. Warner. First assistant director Attila Saleh Yusser. First assistant director Kamen Belkovsky. Second assistant director Max Sturgeon. Associate producers Julian Lavichka, Nate Meyer, Amilcar Jones. Cast: Jamie Lee Curtis as Lori, Andy Matichak as Allison, James Jude Courtney as The Shape, Rohan Campbell as Corey, Will Patton as Frank, Jesse C. Boyd as Officer Mullaney, Michael Barbieri as Terry, Destiny Monet as Stacy, Joey Harris as Margot, Martine as Billy, Joanne Barron as Joan, Rick Moose as Ronald, Michelle Dawson as Nurse Deb, Kieran Harris as Willie the Kid, Kyle Richards as Lindsay, Michael O'Leary as Dr. Mathis, Jackson Goldenberg as Jeremy, Candace Rose as Mrs. Allen, Jack William Marshall as Mr. Allen, Nancy Turcotte as gas station proprietor, Diva Tyler as Sandra, Layla Wilson as Sandra's sister, Diana Prince as radio receptionist, Black Fowler as vagabond, Tony DeMille as Terry's father, Holly Saperstein as Oscar's mom, Matt Meese as Detective Number One, Jimmy Cummings as Detective Number Two, Montarius Daly as Detective Number Three, Stephen Willoughby as Responding Officer Number One, Omar J. Dorsey as Sheriff Barker, Jibrail Nantambu as Julian, Giovanna Rogers as Waitress, John Bruce as TV Reporter, Dave Braun as Coroner, Nick Castle as Flasher, Joey Brinkley as The Butcher. Stunt coordinators Kevin Scott, Corey DeMyers, Jason Gray. Songs: Midnight Monsters Hop, performed by Jack and Jim. Toccata and Fugue in D Minor, BWV 565. Olafaced, Fear Thee. WURG Radio IDs, performed by Rick Randall and Mike Michelli. Misbehavin', performed by Martine. Don't Let the Devil Get You Down, performed by Walt Richardson. Halloween, performed by Dead Kennedys. License to Confuse, performed by Sebado. Don't Fear the Reaper. Come to Me, performed by Johnny Goth. This Time I'm in Love, performed by Zeus. Devil's Night, performed by Donnie Elbert and the Flames. Haunt Me, Baby, performed by Boa Constrictors. Burn It Down, performed by Boy Harsher. Tell Me With Your Eyes, Just Be You, performed by Rob Galbraith. Honky Tonk Crunk, performed by Them Carolina Boys. I Was a Teenage Werewolf, performed by The Cramps. Burn It Down, Rework, performed by Boy Harsher. Don't Fear the Reaper, performed by Blue Oyster Cult. Soundtrack on Sacred Bones Records. Copyright 2022, Nightblade 3 Holdings, LLC. All rights reserved. Animated Universal Studios logo, copyright 2013, Universal Studios. Nightblade 3 Holdings, LLC, is the author of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Universal Pictures. Read by Adrienne Barbeau. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org.